You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, I'll tell you, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
Kelly out of the corner for three in it.
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Harden on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three. He got it.
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary.
Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Rockets are now on a bit of a three-game skid against some of the top-tier opponents here in the Western Conference, just in the league in general. First, the Nuggets, then the Clippers, and now the I-45 rivalry, the Dallas Mavericks. Rockets fall to the Mavericks 137-123, although the game was much closer than that until the Mavericks blew it completely open with about 5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to go in the fourth. Rockets cut the lead to 5, 112-107, and then seemingly let the game kind of slip away from there. This game was interesting for a lot of reasons, and this recap pod might be a bit word vomity. I'm going to try and stay away from that because I have a lot of thoughts concerning the Clippers loss as well as this loss, and I'm not sure which direction my thoughts are going to go on it, so I apologize preemptively if I seem jumpy from topic to topic. The first thing that I'll come out with, though, and I guess it makes sense that I start with this first, I will start with how the Rockets have started. They have started slow. They've come out in these games, these past three losses against Denver, against the Clippers, and now against the Mavericks. And maybe lethargic is too strong of a word to use. Wow, I'm a bit lethargic apparently. All right, let's try that again. Maybe lethargic is too strong of a word to use, but they haven't looked great coming out of the gate. And they're putting themselves in these holes that they then have to dig themselves out of, and it's causing weird issues with rotations where James Harden is running unbelievably high minutes in November. You know, there's no reason for James Harden to play 41 minutes in a loss in November. It's kind of absurd. So you have today's game where in the first quarter, they dig themselves into the hole 45-29 at the end of the first. Then you go back to the Clippers game. They ended that first quarter 31-23. And you go back to the Nuggets, 27-22. Not quite as bad, but you see the trend there where the Rockets are not starting these games strong. That's a major concern. The other major concern is that all three of these teams, starting with Denver, and then the Clippers copied, and now the Mavericks have copied it, all three of these teams are implementing this really aggressive double team of James Harden. And because it's a copycat league, other teams, having seen the success now, three games in a row, three losses in a row for the Rockets, other teams will probably continue to implement this double team strategy. That's just how the league works. If one team does something good, somebody else is going to copy it. And then when they say that two teams have done it successfully, another team's going to copy it until suddenly all 29 teams are attempting to do the same thing, attempting to run the same scheme against James Harden. And I try not to read too deeply into things that aren't just said specifically. So, like, I try not to read into, I guess, like, mannerisms, or try to read too deeply into the context sometimes behind what a player or a coach or an administrative personnel of an organization says. But in James Harden's post-game interview in Denver, he looked just maybe not beside himself, but he looked very concerned in that post-game interview where he was discussing the double team that he was facing all night from Denver. I mean, his eyes were wide. He looked shell-shocked almost. And that's far and away from the demeanor that we usually see out of James Harden, a much more relaxed personality, even at times very animated. But in this one, he just, I'm talking eyes wide open, almost like he had seen a ghost. And for a guy who consistently gets the opposing team's best defender thrown at him, gets defenses that are completely geared to shut him down on a nightly basis, I think this may be one of the first times, and now he's dealt with it for a stretch of games, where he's really seeing a scheme it's working to an extent. Now, in tonight's game, as I record this Sunday evening, sorry, I should say this afternoon's game, James still finished with 32 points, so he's still scoring the ball, sure, but it's just different because of how much harder he really is having to work for it. When James gets to work one-on-one against anybody, even when he's working one-on-one against a good defender like the Kawhi Leonards or the Paul Georges of the league, even when he's playing against guys like that, when he gets to play one-on-one, he gets to do his game. He gets to get into his rhythm, and he's very much a rhythm-type player. When he's facing this double team and he's constantly having to get the ball to other guys, and he's constantly being forced to get the ball out of his hands, he can't get into his rhythm. He can't, you know, get into his little between the legs dribbling. He can't lull his defender to sleep. He can't get into his rhythm to then get his shots off, to get his step back going, to get his drives to the basket the normal way that he's used to playing. So credit to these three teams for implementing this. Well, really credit to Denver first, and then the Clippers and the Mavericks for copying it effectively. But this double-team strategy, it's concerning because it absolutely forces the Rockets to execute, and it forces them, it really does force you to take the ball out of your best player's hands. And Rockets fans who remember Yao Ming will remember that this was an issue that we faced in the past with Yao, with the fronting defense that Yao would sometimes encounter, where defenders were allowed to really get in front of him. And because of his size, because of just how enormous Yao was, a lot of times referees would let defenders get away with a lot of what, especially in today's NBA, would be considered illegal contact and should have been considered illegal contact back then. I mean, Yao would walk away and he'd have like scratches all up and down his arms and bruises, and because guys were, you know, half his size, 6'10", 6'9", trying to defend him, and they'd have to leverage under him and they'd be fouling him and scraping him and all this stuff. And so that fronting defense effectively at times would shut down Yao Ming, because that's all you could do to shut him down, because once you got Yao the ball, he was basically unguardable. Just like James Harden, working one-on-one in isolation is basically unguardable. You're either going to foul him or he is going to score. So how do you beat that? You simply make the rest of the team beat you. And effectively, that's what the Denver Nuggets did, that's what the Clippers did, and that's what the Mavericks did, is they have absolutely forced the ball out of James Harden's hands. Is he still scoring it? Yes. But is he able to drop 40, 50, maybe 60 points on you? No. And at this point, you'll live with James Harden dropping 30 on you. That is a relatively contained night for James Harden. So that's my biggest concern, or one of my biggest concerns, one of my biggest takeaways from these past three games is this double team that James has been facing, and the fact that the other four Rockets on the court, namely Russell Westbrook, need to be able to take advantage of the opportunities given to them to play 4-on-3, even if it's just for a few seconds, if James Harden's going to continue to see these double teams. And we'll continue to talk more about this and other things on the other side of this break. And we are rolling right along right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. So we already covered the ridiculous set of double teams that James Harden has faced now three games in a row and will probably continue to face as they face at least the top 15 or so teams in the league, because let's face it, the bottom tier teams of the NBA probably don't have the personnel, or maybe they just don't care about attempting to implement the same schemes that some of the better teams in the league are using. Like, for example, when the Rockets play the Atlanta Hawks this upcoming Saturday, November 30th, I highly doubt the Hawks are going to be double-teaming James Harden at the half-court margin. If they do, kudos to the Hawks for trying to win these games, but the Hawks are basically a lottery team. So I don't really expect the Hawks to do this. So there will hopefully be some games where James can play his brand of basketball and not have to so much worry about these really frustrating double teams that he's having to look at on a nightly basis. But if they do it, then more power to him. Other areas of concern, the bench is definitely not up to par, was not up to par in this game. You had 6 points off the bench between McLemore, Rivers, Chandler, and Cephalosha before the garbage time players came in and hit a couple shots. Rivers on the night, 2 of 7 overall, 0 of 3 from downtown. McLemore, 0 of 6 overall, missed all 6 of his 3-point attempts, just hit 2 free throws. That's it. And those were basically your bench guys, because you had Tyson Chandler in the game for all of about 3 minutes, and then you had Tabo Cephalosha in the game for all of 2 minutes. Mike D'Antoni effectively ran a 7-man rotation here in the middle, near the back end of November. In the, 17th game of the season, we're running a 7-man rotation. Now, yes, I understand that this is because of the Eric Gordon injury, but running an 8-man rotation in November still isn't good. We saw that given the opportunity, Chris Clemens and Isaiah Hartenstein can have an impact on a game. Are they going to be difference makers every time they step on the court? Heavens no. They're young. They're raw. They are talented guys, and you know, maybe someday down the line they can be meaningful contributors to a team on a consistent basis. But you're not looking for consistency out of these guys. You're looking for maybe some added variance, because maybe you get that one night where Hartenstein has another 10 plus rebound game. Maybe you get that night where Chris Clemens just cannot miss from behind the arc. And on a night where Rivers and McLemore combined were 0 of 9 from distance, maybe Clemens checks into the game and nails his first 3 3-pointers in a row. I don't know. I would just like to see Mike D'Antoni have a little bit of faith in spots 9 through 12 on his bench. Because you've got Clemens, you've got Hartenstein, and we've said it before, you've got Gary Clark over there. these guys could be beneficial. And it is still, to this day, mind-boggling that Mike D'Antoni just refuses to go to these guys. That he chooses to let his other guys, to let Rivers, to let McLemore, just continue to fire up these shots and just watch every single one miss. I cannot wrap my head around it at times. And on a night where James Harden also didn't have it going, 2 of 15 three-point shooting for James Harden. I haven't run through stat lines yet, my apologies, but kind of already mentioned it. James finished the night against the Mavericks with 32 points, 11 assists, 9 rebounds, so just one shy of a triple-double. He did have a steal, 6 turnovers, quite a bit for James, who's actually been taking pretty good care of the ball lately. 8 of 10 from the charity stripe, 11 of 24 overall shooting, 2 of 15 again from downtown, and he played a whopping 41 minutes, a team-high 41 minutes. Westbrook, 27 points, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, a steal, 4 turnovers, 9 of 10 from the free throw line, so great free throw shooting from Russell Westbrook, 2 of 5 from downtown for him, 8 of 20 overall. Clint Capella with another 20-20 outing, 21 points, 22 rebounds. He did have 3 assists as well, 2 steals, no blocks tonight, a few goaltends from him, so he's getting up there, just not quite quick enough. Daniel House Jr., 16 points, a couple boards, a steal, some great defense, 3 of 8 three-point shooting, 3 of 4 from the charity stripe. PJ Tucker, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a block, 2 of 5 from downtown. So your starters are getting it done. And that's how it's been this entire season. Even while they had Eric Gordon, who was secretly battling the knee injury, even before you lost him, your starters were carrying games for you. And they are continuing to do that. These starters are one of the, if not the best starting lineup in the league, as far as net rating is concerned. They may have dropped a few pegs after some of these losses, but during that 8-game win streak, this was the most effective starting lineup in the league as far as net rating is concerned, and that's one of the best stats to look at when you are trying to rank the top-tier talent in the league. But the bench has issues, and if they can't find consistent production, I think that there's a silver lining there, because you hope, and the hope should be that Eric Gordon, when he comes back near the tail end of December, the hope should be that Eric Gordon comes back and he's able to anchor that bench unit and provide you that spark off the bench that you're really missing, that 15 to 20 points a night. Ideally, he'd probably be in your closing lineup, maybe in place of Daniel House, maybe in place of PJ Tucker, maybe in some nights, maybe in place of Russell Westbrook if you really, really need the shooting, maybe in place of Clint Capella, but missing Eric Gordon, missing arguably your third or fourth best player overall, it hurts, especially when he's supposed to be the guy who anchors your bench and who comes in and provides that scoring punch, provides the extra shooting to surround Russell Westbrook with, things of that nature. So his absence is definitely being felt, because McLemore, I think, continues to show that he really shouldn't be relied on for the heavy minutes that he's been playing to cover the Daniel House injury, the couple starts that he had, the increased minutes that he's seeing as pretty much the seventh man in the rotation. Overall, though, the silver lining is you're playing without Eric Gordon, you're playing without your sixth man, and right now, with the bench being such a big issue, that simply gets solved when Eric Gordon comes back. Now, in the meantime, what can you do until then? Ideally, Mike D'Antoni could stop being such a stickler and actually give his young guys a chance. Because again, if you let Hartenstein and Clemens and Clark play even for a minute or two, and if they go out there and they make a bunch of mistakes in that 1 or 2 minutes, then great, you bench them again. That's fine. Play them with a short leash. That is okay. You're the coach. You can sub in and out at will. You can put a player in and sub them out 15 seconds later if you want to, if they make a horrid mistake on the first possession that they're on the court and you are just unhappy with how it looked, put them in, take them right back out. But is that going to happen? No. Now, sure, there might be some concerns about Chris Clemens and maybe his height, and is he a liability on defense? I don't think so. I think that the way that Clemens is built, he has shown that he can be at least average defender on the perimeter. And if you line him up with minutes that are not in, say, the Tuck Wagon lineup, where you've got PJ Tucker playing the center spot, then it doesn't necessarily put you at a disadvantage on the boards. So if you pair Chris Clemens out there with a true center like Clint Capella or Isaiah Hartenstein or even Tyson Chandler, then you're not as concerned with the liability that he provides being, you know, a whole head shorter than some other NBA players. But the shooting that he gives you and the range that he gives you and the quick release that he gives you means that defenses have to stay honest and hold him. And that could be critical for a lineup that just seemingly can't hit threes. Austin Rivers he was all right in the Clippers game, but the last like four or five games, Austin Rivers' three-point shot has just disappeared. Ben McLemore is just consistently inconsistent. He fills that Gerald Green role where he's supposed to be able to simply set quick screens at the top of the key. And as defenses double James Harden, Ben McLemore is supposed to be able to catch that ball and shoot. Missing six wide open three-pointers, because I'm fairly positive every single three that McLemore took was wide open. Missing six wide open three-pointers is just, it's ridiculous. It's unacceptable at the NBA level that the Rockets can't find a guy who can consistently hit wide open looks. We were talking about it on social media the other day that Daniel House Jr., PJ Tucker, and James Harden are your best shooters. Now, obviously, this comes on the heels of a night where James Harden was 2 of 15 from behind the arc. Is that going to happen every night? No. James had a bad shooting night. Should he have probably started taking it in after his 8th or 9th or 10th miss? Probably. But it's James Harden. At any moment, he could have caught fire, started raining threes from the heavens, and taken over the game, because that's just how James Harden is. Did it happen? No, and that's regrettable. But Daniel House Jr., PJ Tucker, and James Harden should be the ones taking the majority of your three-point shots. Russell Westbrook at 2 of 5, I'm okay with, because pretty much every three that he did take was wide open, and he chose many times this evening, earlier today in the afternoon game, he chose many times to avoid the three or to pass up on the three-point attempt in favor of driving the ball in and either driving in and creating another opportunity for another Rocket or driving the ball in himself and either getting fouled, which led to his 10 free throw attempts where he shot 9 of 10, or it led to an opportunity for another player to score. Just Westbrook had a good game. It was kind of a mixed bag, and we'll get more on that in this next segment, but I have a quick word from our friends over at Audible. Audible has the world's largest selection of audiobooks and audio entertainment, and you can actually start listening with a 30-day Audible trial. You choose one audiobook and two Audible originals absolutely free. You can visit audible.com/lockedonNBA for this offer. Now, if you're listening on the go and you can't visit Audible right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. And welcome back into Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. As promised, talking Russell Westbrook, at least to start this final segment. Westbrook's game was a bit of a mixed bag because he played really well for about, we'll say, 2.5 quarters. And he just played really poorly for about a quarter and a half. And it was kind of spaced out throughout the whole game, so there were stretches. So, like, the end of the stretch in the first quarter, where the Mavericks had three straight and one scoring opportunities on the Rockets. That was not a great stretch from Westbrook, from the Westbrook-led lineups. Some couple turnovers in there, some missed opportunities. And then the end of the game, where he seemingly, it started the downtrend on Westbrook's playing ability, I guess, in this game, for lack of a better way to phrase that, sorry. It happened when it was the fast break where James was leading the break right down the middle. Westbrook was on his right, and then James dished the ball to Westbrook, and Westbrook went up and just put a little bit too much mustard on the ball, to quote Bill Worrell or Matt Bullard. I'm not sure which one of them said it. But that moment was basically where Westbrook started to play like Westbrook. And he's very polarizing, because you have moments where you see you see why he was an MVP. You see how explosive he is. You see the acrobatic layups that he's able to make. He had the really incredible reverse layup going baseline, where I didn't think he was going to make it. I thought he was going up to dunk the ball on one end, and then he hung in the air and just this incredibly just acrobatic reverse layup, and ball goes in and crowd goes wild. It was incredible. So you see these flashes and these moments from Westbrook where he looks like the MVP caliber 16-17 Westbrook that we thought we were pairing with James Harden. And, well, maybe I'm not even going to say it that way. We weren't even expecting MVP-level Westbrook when we got him. What we were expecting was a Westbrook who would at least convert consistently on his shots directly at the rim. And I think that's the most confusing part, is because not only have we, through now 17 games, learned the struggles of Westbrook and his mid-range and long-distance shooting struggles, but he misses a lot of bunnies right at the rim, and it's really perplexing. Like, he'll be right at the rim, he'll have beaten his defender, he's hanging in the air, and he just puts a little too much force on the ball, or it just rolls right off the rim, and it's the most confusing thing, because he's right there at the rim, and you would think that those shots are some of the easiest to convert, because you think of all the times that James Harden barely beats his defender, or his defender's still hanging on him right by the hip, and James is able to convert on all these layups, basically, right at the rim. And yet, seemingly, Russ misses quite a few of these attempts. And they're just kind of head-scratchers, because you're like, well, he did the right thing. He beat his man, got all the way to the rim. To quote the great Corey Brewer talking to Coach Kevin McHale. Wait, was it McHale? It was either McHale or D'Antoni, one of the two. Wait, no, Corey Brewer. It had to have been McHale. Anyways, to quote Corey Brewer, I'm sorry, coach. I shook my man, got around two defenders, got to the rim, and I just ran out of talent. It's one of the best sports quotes of all time. So maybe that's all it is. Maybe Westbrook just runs out of talent on occasion when he gets right to the rim. Maybe he just needs to work on his touch a little bit. Maybe he just needs to focus on dunking the ball when he gets there instead of just trying to lay it in. I don't know. But it's a mixed bag with Westbrook, because he's generating open looks, and it just feels bad when the Rockets can't convert on these open looks, because, again, when you shoot as a team, what was their percentage tonight? 10 of 44. It's going to be hard to beat any team in the NBA when you shoot 22% from behind the arc. Not 32%, not 42%, 22%, 10 of 44. It's going to be hard to beat anybody with those numbers. So a lot of that comes from James Harden's shooting struggles. A lot of that comes from the pretty much big fat goose egg that they got from the bench production. But part of that comes from, or part of the reason that Westbrook's numbers don't look as great as they probably should, because again, he generates open looks and then the guys just aren't converting on them. And so that feels bad because Westbrook, you know, could be sitting at 10 or 11 or 12 assists. I don't have the potential assist numbers. But instead, he's, you know, all the way down at 6. He's got his handful of turnovers. And the Rockets actually did a decent job there in the second half, or not even in the second half, from quarters 2 through 4. They actually did a pretty good job after, I think it was 7 turnovers in that first quarter, 6 or 7 early turnovers. And then the rest of the way, they only had 3 or 4. And I don't even think they had another turnover until the fourth quarter specifically. But a lot of people on social media are trying to find blame, because that's what happens. It's a 3-game losing streak now, and everybody wants to point a finger at something. Some people want to point a finger at the coaching. Some people want to point a finger at Westbrook. Some people want to point fingers at the bench. Some people want to point fingers at Harden. But I want to get out of here and I want to try to look at things from an optimistic standpoint. And the optimistic standpoint is that, look, James Harden had an off shooting night. The bench had a woeful shooting night. The bench is also missing your 3rd or 4th best player on the team in Eric Gordon. And you just faced 3 of the top 5 or 6 teams in the Western Conference in a row. Denver, Clippers, and then the Mavericks. You lost all 3 games, and yeah, that feels a little bad, especially after coming off of an 8-game win streak. But you were also without some players in those games. Again, Eric Gordon's going to be out until the end of December, give or take. You were missing House in the Clippers game. You missed House for much of the Denver game after the Jokic screen. So you're not playing with a fully healthy roster, and yet you're playing competitive games. The Denver game, you didn't get blown out of the water. You were competitive in that game. You were really competitive in the Clippers game, and it really came down to a last-second shot. And then even in the Mavericks game, you know, you came out a little slow, sluggish in that first quarter, but you made a game of it and you fought, and the Rockets got back into the game and they were really close. They were right there. Just didn't quite have the gas to get over the hump. So maybe when you get Eric Gordon back, you can spread the love a little bit, spread the minutes around, not push your starters to the brink of 40 minutes in a November game against the Mavericks. You get that extra scoring punch off the bench. And I'm a firm believer, and I actually don't know which metric would back this up, but I get into arguments with my dad, actually, of all people, about this all the time, because he's much more of a defensive-minded type guy when it comes to sports, across all sports. He's defense first everywhere. And that's a good mantra to have. But turnovers and missing your shots on offense compounds what is already not a stellar defense. So when the Rockets have shooting struggles, when they miss 34 three-pointers, yeah, 34, sorry, I had to do the math in my head. When you miss the 34 threes, those are missed shots, and those are opportunities for a high-octane Mavericks offense to then get the ball in transition, to have players leak out, to get a long rebound into the hands of Luka and have him take off down the court. Prevents you from getting your defense set. There's a lot of negatives that come with live ball turnovers, which is an offensive problem, and also missing shots, which is an offensive problem. If you don't turn the ball over, and if you start hitting your shots, then suddenly the opposing team doesn't get to get out in transition, and they don't get to attack a defense that isn't quite set up. Now, the metrics on this, the numbers on this are going to be skewed a bit because it doesn't always correlate to quote-unquote transition points. But the Rockets, a lot of times, off of a missed opportunity, even sometimes off of a made shot when they score the ball, and then they match back up on defense, and I'm sure many of you have noticed this too, sometimes the Rockets are a bit lazy in picking up their defenders. And sometimes, even without a switch having occurred, Clint Capela or the big out there on the court, sometimes they just don't match up properly on defense. And that is one of the things that bothers me to my very core, is watching everybody walk back on defense. And just because Clint Capela is the closest to a certain player, he suddenly gets relegated to guarding that player rather than matching up with the guy that he should be guarding, like Porzingis or Powell or one of the other bigs. Sometimes he just gets relegated to guarding the guy that's nearest to him, which might be a wing player. And that is not where you want Capela. I mean, sure, if he gets switched onto a guard or a wing player because that's the scheme, because you're planning for him to switch, by all means, do that if you feel that's necessary. But the lazy switching or the off-ball switching that isn't even necessary. Like when I watch games, and this is something that you evolve with, and some people choose to, you know, just watch the ball a lot when they're watching games. Other people try to watch the whole court and they watch a lot of the off-ball movement as well. But when I'm watching games, I'm trying to watch everything. I'm trying to take everything in. And one of the things that I've noticed is that when the ball is, say, at the top of the key or on one of the wings or whatever, and you've got James and Clint and the offensive players are having some motion down there on the side, and the ball hasn't gotten to that, to the strong or the weak, or hasn't gotten to the weak side yet, sometimes James will just kind of push Clint or motion to Clint, hey, you get this guy, or they'll start a switch even though the ball is nowhere near them. And it's not just James. It happens with other players too, but I think it's more distinct with James because of his lack of movement on the defensive end until the ball is in his offensive player's hands. But it's just, I don't think that's a great way to start your defense, to set things up, to have Capela switched onto a wing player or a guard, because we've seen how that works out. We saw how that worked out quite a few times earlier this afternoon against the Mavericks, where Capela got switched on to Tim Hardaway Jr., or he got switched on to Luka, or it's not great. And it'd be nice if the Rockets had somebody to not necessarily overhaul this defense, but it'd be nice if maybe the switching occurred less, because it doesn't feel like it's setting up or limiting opportunities, because all it feels like it's doing sometimes is generating wide open looks for the other team. I can't count how many times earlier this afternoon the Rockets switched something up, and it's just like the Rockets offense, where James Harden hunts for a switch, gets a big put on him, and then attacks the hole and breaks things down. Luka did the same thing a number of times to Capela and other players. He hunted for the switch that he wanted, drove to the basket, and he either scored the ball himself or created an opportunity for somebody else. He had the lob to KP at one point, plenty of corner passes to Tim Hardaway Jr., who went off for, what was it, 31 points? Yeah, 31 points for Hardaway, 41 for Luka, 23 for KP. Strong night from the Mavericks. You tip your cap to them. I'm not ready to call for blowing things up for the Rockets. It's still November. They still have time to work things out. And continuing on the silver lining type strand? No, that's not how I want to say that. Anyways, continuing down the path of, you know, kind of following this silver lining type ideology, Westbrook in the second half looked a lot better up until that kind of final stretch where he missed that one bunny pass or bunny layup on the pass from Harden in the transition break, or in the fast break transition there at the very end during that stretch where the Mavericks kind of took off and sealed the game. Westbrook looked good. He was attacking the basket. He only attempted 1 3 in the second half, and he hit that 1 3, so that's how he finished 2 of 5. But he was attacking the basket consistently. He was passing up what would have been wide open three-point attempts in favor of driving to the basket, in favor of driving and then getting his other teammates involved. And that's the Westbrook that he needs to get comfortable in, that version of his game within this offense. I said it myself earlier on Twitter, is he's not a video game character. We can't expect Westbrook to just drive the ball and hammer it in every single time he touches it. Those are unfair, unrealistic expectations of Russell Westbrook. Now, that being said, there are plenty of players that don't have reliable outside shots and have never really had reliable outside shots. A couple that come to mind are Ben Simmons, Rajon Rondo, guys of that nature who still make it work and who are still incredible playmakers. Now, is Westbrook maybe a little bit more sloppy with the ball than those two guys? Maybe not as quite as crisp or clean on some of his passes? Sure, you can make that argument. But those are guys that maybe Westbrook can imitate a bit. And it seems weird, you know, saying that Westbrook should imitate those guys. But if Westbrook is going to take anything more than four or five threes a game, defenses will be ecstatic about that. Because there's not, I highly doubt there will be a night where Westbrook suddenly magically hits like 6 of 10 from behind the arc. It could happen in theory, but is it going to? More than likely not. Like, let's be honest with ourselves. Every time Westbrook shoots the ball, he's shooting 22% from behind the arc on the season. Every time he shoots a three, defenses are overjoyed because that is a great defensive possession for you if it ends in a Westbrook three-point attempt, because that's another three you take away from Harden or for Tucker or for Daniel House, who those two guys are shooting over 40%. Harden's third on the team at 35%. So if you're taking threes away from those three guys and you're letting Westbrook shoot them instead, or Austin Rivers or Ben McLemore, who those two are hovering down at 30%, you're doing a great job as a defense. So Westbrook can't be content to sit there and take those wide open threes. He just can't. He has to attack and he has to work to generate opportunities for the guys who are consistently shooting the ball well on the team. PJ Tucker only had 5 three-point attempts tonight. He shot 2 of 5. Daniel House, 3 of 8. I'd like to see both of those guys getting anywhere from, at a minimum, 8 attempts. But I'd like to see them both getting more than 10 attempts a game. I think that PJ Tucker, especially, for as consistent as he usually is shooting the ball, needs to be somewhere around 10 attempts a game. Some of those three attempts that Harden took on a night where he's not shooting the ball well, or some of the three-point attempts from Austin Rivers and Ben McLemore, maybe PJ Tucker needs to be in those spots. But again, he's one of the hesitant shooters. We've seen times where PJ is wide open because he's in the tuck wagon center spot lineup, and he catches the ball at the top of the key, and the opposing five that's guarding him, maybe it's Dwight Powell or Kristaps Porzingis, and they're well within the paint because they're getting ready to guard a drive, and PJ has about 10 feet of space, and he doesn't even look for the shot immediately. And it's moments like that where you really miss having the quick trigger of Eric Gordon or Gerald Green, because those guys, they'll start shooting the ball before they're even looking at the basket. Sometimes they'll start shooting the ball before they even have the ball in their hands. They're that ready to shoot. And they've got quick triggers. And that keeps the defense honest because they know that as soon as those guys touch the ball, they're a danger to shoot, which then opens up driving lanes for both of them. PJ just needs to shoot the ball more. House needs to shoot the ball more. Westbrook needs to shoot less from distance, although he was 2 of 5 in this game. We'll give him credit there. And he is making strides in the right direction. Because overall, in that second half, he was playing how we need him to play all the time. But if they can come out and play in the first quarter how they have in quarters 2 through 4 against the Mavs and against the Clippers and against the Nuggets, then this team will be okay. They really will. I'm not ready to shut things down 17 games into the season. I'm not ready to say let's trade Westbrook. I'm not ready to say that the Chris Paul Westbrook trade is a failure 17 games in. It's too early to tell. This team hasn't even played with a fully healthy roster yet. I think we owe them the benefit of the doubt to just wait it out and see. Would you have liked to pick up some of these wins? Absolutely. Would it have been great, especially to beat the Mavericks? That old I-45 rivalry? Yeah, it would have been great. But it's the first meetup. It's 17 games in. And overall, I think this team has given us a lot of glimpses into what is possible. And they're still fighting. That's the important part. At no point in this game did they hang their heads low, or in the Clippers game where they got down by double digits, or in the Denver game where they got down by double digits, at no point did this team hang their heads and just say, you know what, we just lost. We're going to get blown out by 20, or we're going to get blown out by 30 or 40. They didn't do that. And that's important too. These guys are fighting. They're trying to win these games. And it's the NBA. You're going to lose some games. They're still 11-6, which is quite a bit better than 11-14. And I think that's where I'll leave that. Now, I do, before I get out of here today, want to give a quick shout out to somebody specific, but it kind of extends to all of the listeners of Locked On Rockets as a whole. We are now at November 24th, and that means I've been doing this for almost 2 months now, because I took over and did my first Locked On Rockets podcast very early in October. And recently, somebody sent an email to the Locked On Rockets email, which is lockedonrockets@gmail.com, and shared some very kind words with me. And I just wanted to say I really appreciate that. And you guys should know this man. His name's Ed, and he is the gentleman actually married to LaWanda, who is known as the dancing Jumbotron woman at the Rockets home games. Everybody should be very familiar with her. She's very popular. Rockets number one fan. And Ed had some very kind words about me taking over the podcast and some words of encouragement and support. And so thank you for that, Ed. I greatly appreciate that. And I also wanted to say thank you to everybody else who has continued to listen to the podcast. I know that I was personally a little worried that after Ben left that a lot of the listeners would leave with him, but it seems, at least so far, a month or so in, month and a half in, that a majority of you have continued to listen to the podcast, and for that, I thank you. I thank you for giving me the opportunity to put my voice out there, to do things a little bit differently than Ben, to put my own spin on things, to handle things my own way. I think that at first, that first week or so, I was attempting to keep doing things in Ben's style, and that's just not who I am. And so I think that it took me a little bit to get comfortable, and I'm still learning. I'm still getting comfortable with this, and I appreciate everybody's feedback, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Facebook, whether it's via email. I read those. I do my best to interact when I can. And at the end of the day, this show, this podcast is for you guys. It's for the listeners. I don't do this podcast and then immediately upload it and then sit there and listen to myself talk. Now, I do go back and listen to these for research purposes and to kind of improve myself, but I don't upload these podcasts and then turn right back around and just listen to them and sit there and think, yeah, I sound great. This is incredible content. That's not what this is about. This is about you guys, and this is about the Houston Rockets. And so whatever I can do to improve this experience for you guys, I say it at the end of every podcast, I'm here for it. I'm here to listen. I appreciate any and all feedback you guys give to me. And so again, I just wanted to say thank you sincerely from myself to you as a listener, every single one of you guys out there, guys and gals. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to do this. And if you're going to continue listening, I appreciate it. And again, thank you, Ed, for your email. It meant a lot to me. Reading that was really important to me, and it did mean a lot. So I think that's where I will go ahead and leave things off for today. Tried to end things on a bit of a silver lining with the Rockets, and then wanted to end things on a happy note with a thank you to you guys. So with that, for this Sunday, November 24th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening. Now, you guys know the drill. If you want more content before our next show, social media is where everything's happening. I'm on there, at JT Gatlin. Our special analyst and correspondent, Ben DuBose, is on there, at Ben DuBose. And of course, the show is on there, at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/lockedonrockets, the website, lockedonrockets.com, and our email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Again, really, all these avenues are just ways for you to let me know if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes that go straight to your inbox before they show up on the previously mentioned social media outlets, and then we get the benefit of looking really attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Again, for this Sunday, November 24th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you very, very much for listening, and I hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.